हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 67, verses 32 to 49. Description of the autumn season. Sukadeva Goswami continued. While Lord Rama and Lord Keshava were thus dwelling in Vrindavan, the fall season arrived. When the sky is cloudless, the water clear, and the wind gentle. The autumn season, which generated the lotus flowers, also restored the various bodies of water to their original purity. Just as the process of devotional service purifies the minds of the fallen yogis when they return to it. Autumn cleared the sky of clouds, let the animals get out of their crowded living conditions, cleaned the earth of its covering of mud, and purified the water of contamination. In the same way that loving service rendered to Lord Krishna frees the members of the four spiritual orders from their respective troubles. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, the autumn season takes away the rolling of dark clouds in the sky as well as the polluted water. Filthy conditions on the grounds also become cleansed. Similarly, a person who takes to Krishna consciousness immediately becomes cleansed of all dirty things within and without. Krishna is therefore known as Hari. Hari means he who takes away. Krishna immediately takes away all unclean habits from anyone who takes to Krishna consciousness. In his commentary to this verse, Srila Jiva Goswami writes, bhakti does not destroy the ashramas, but only the difficulties in certain duties. Thus, there is no recommendation for destroying the system. Right? So, bhakti, because this bhakti is expressed through activities, right? That's the point of devotional service. It's service. So, the activity is being performed. The individual with their particular identity as servant of Krishna and then the particular knowledge and skills according to their ability then applies themselves in expressing their devotion to Krishna. So then the devotional process does not destroy the ashramas. It doesn't do that. You can use them very nicely in Krishna's service. Right? So that's the standard. So by devotional service, everything becomes purified. That's the position that's there. Sukadeva Goswami continued, the clouds, having given up all they possessed, shone forth with purified effulgence, just like peaceful sages who have given up all material desires and are thus free of all sinful propensities. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, the clouds of autumn are white, for they do not carry any water. Similarly, a retired man being freed from all responsibility of family affairs, namely maintaining the home, wife, and children, and taking completely to Krishna consciousness, becomes freed from all anxieties and looks as white as clouds in the autumn. Yeah. So, within the Grihastha ashram, then the folks, what we said before is that the ashram is, the bhakti is not destroying the ashrams. But, depending upon our consciousness, we'll be putting more focus on devotional service or on the ashrams. Mm-hmm. Right? Or on the varnas. So then, here, that when one becomes purified, when one's consideration is just the aspect of devotional service. Right, and as we explained, devotional service can be expressed through these different positions of varna and ashram. But it's a matter of whether one has something to gain from that or so that you can, or that you, are just interested in devotional service. Because much of the time we say, oh, devotional service, so that means you're doing nothing. Right? But are devotees doing nothing? No, they're very busy doing so many things. But for us, why do we do something? Because of the benefit we'll get. Does that make sense? So there's always this karma, misra, jnana, misra, bhakti. So then we may think, the retired man here, he's freed from all responsibility of family affairs, namely maintaining the home, wife, and children. Because before as a grihastha, that's the focus, that's what one's doing. One's cultivating, one's maintaining the home. Right? But vanaprastha means you're doing devotional service. So whatever's there, then it's however Krishna maintains it. You take care to do your particular duties, but you're not doing them because it's to expand the grihastha ashram, the benefits that are there. Does this make sense? So therefore, if it goes up or it goes down, you're not worried, right? As a grihastha, it goes up, it's good, and if it goes down, it's not so good. Right? But as a vanaprastha, it doesn't matter because Krishna's taking care. You're doing your duties, but we have to remember the results of a duty. Results come from duties, and the results are up to Krishna. So as a grihastha, you're working for specific results in the form of the ashram. While in vanaprastha means you're not working for specific results. You're simply working to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And then whatever comes up from that, then that's what you do. Because we have to remember, we're not the doer. That's also another illusion. Right? That we can, play with as a grihastha. But one sees that after so many years, one is not as in control as one would like to, think or say one is. Yes? So they should give more means?
Give more to others.
And what is this more that they are giving? Yes, basically, it's because, in other words, means how much time does a grihastha have to spend on other people other than their own family? Right? Not so much. There's only so many programs you can go to, so many this and that, because there's so much to do within the grihastha ashram. So the vanaprastha means now you're only maintaining the facilities you have as much as needed to be engaged in service. Right? So you don't have to expand everything. It's not that every year, it's that time of year, now it's time to go out and buy saris and this and that. You don't have to do that kind of stuff anymore. It's as it's needed, you do. Is it not needed, you don't. If you need it every year, then it goes on every year. But it's more connected with the service. So in other words, the direct activities of devotional service become the prominence in the consciousness. And having taken care of family life for so many years, then just maintaining it's easy. It's expanding it's difficult, but maintaining it's easy. You've already figured out how you want to keep your toothbrush and your toothpaste in the bathroom, right? You don't have to be working out while you're going through a shop. Oh, that would be nice, You don't have to do all that stuff anymore. You understand? So that's the kind of thing, is that it's on the primary. And that, while the grihastha, the focus is on the primary, but depending on realization, there'll be a certain amount of secondary. Right? Does that make sense? But on the vanaprastha, then it's on the primary. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
We said that vanaprastha is a transaction ashram, actually.
Transaction.
Yeah, from grihastha slowly to sunny.
Transition, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say. No. Grihastha is the transaction, and vanaprastha is the transition.
Anyway, so that's a transition from one to another, isn't it?
Yeah. It is a transition, but it itself is also considered a terminal ashram. Means if you finish life as a vanaprastha, it's safe. Like brahmachari, vanaprastha, sannyasa, they're safe. Grihastha is not safe. Why is grihastha not safe? Because then there's so many ideas of doing something more. The vanaprastha, if someone leaves their body, then it's basically that's it. A grihastha is thinking, what about this? And if I just had a few more days, or who's going to take care of this or that? Or That's why it's dangerous, because the focus is on the responsibilities of the secondary aspects of Grihastha Ashram. Then thinking of those, one runs the risk of taking birth again. Right? While in the other three ashrams, the focus being on the primary, then there's more of a chance, just by situational, that you can remember the primary, which is Krishna. So that's why none of these three are a problem. Right? Grihastha life one retires from, but one can retire from that just into vanaprastha and maintain that. Right? So we see as those who are just maintaining that, then they maintain that until they leave the body. Or they transition, like you said, and then from there they take sannyas. Mm. Mm.
And also, from Grihastha, it's also a gradual process, because it's a change of consciousness more than a change of environment. Such.
Means for vanaprastha.
From Grihastha to vanaprastha.
It's all a gradual. I mean, it depends on the individuals. If you like to do things, you know, in a gradual way, or you like the I can't even remember the guy's name. But it's a way the stock market moves. It goes. I think it's two. I can't remember. It's three up, two down. You know, it goes up, then it drops, then it goes up again, drops, and get like that, and then it. So just a matter of it, your nature and how you go through. So maybe you're just going along and then you take a step and then work at that level and then another one and at that. Some people just gradually add in things or subtract things or like that. So it's just, that's the whole point. The Grihastha and the Vanaprastha have the widest range to accommodate the widest mentalities. So that's then what you're dealing with, because the particular attachments that each individual have may be different. We know the categories. It's going to be within the home and family and social and economics and these kind of aspects. But what part of that is going to be prominent, that's going to be unique to each individual. So Grihastha Ashram can accommodate that. While you see the other ashrams, they accommodate less of that. Because the duties are the same, no matter what. Let's say someone is a vanaprastha, or someone's a sannyasi or a brahmachari. Then their duties, basically, whether they're a brahman, kshatriya, or vaishya, doesn't matter. It'll basically be the same. Though you might see that they are a little bit better at certain areas or something like that, but basically the activities are all the same. So it's a slight flavor. It's not any different. But in the Grihastha Ashram, you can have very major differences on how they, what attachments they are connecting, and that. Though the basic framework is still always the same. That's why it's an ashram. But it can accommodate. Somebody can have a very small place with very few things. Someone can have a very small place with a lot of things. Someone can have a very big place with not so much stuff, and someone can have a big place with tons of stuff, you know, and anything in between. Is that, you know, so like that. Someone has more money, someone has less money, someone's giving more in charity, someone less in charity. Does that make sense? Family's bigger or not, or how much they're involved in the programs, or like that. So, within that, since one knows the goal is prema and to be solely, exclusively focused on Krishna and Krishna's pleasure, then one engages all one's attachments in Krishna's service. That purifies them. Then gradually, those that aren't necessary can be given up. Those that are part of the duties, then those are continued. And then there's automatically a gradual reduction in the involvement. Then when that turns into vanaprastha, then even the ones that are standard that are standard duties, then even those, the number of them may not be reduced, or they may, it's just the volume of them becomes reduced. And with time you might see certain of them become dropped. So it's going to be very, very individual. But the mood has to be understood, and so then it goes nicely. So.
Is it okay if this particular mode of vanaprastha is being cultivated by being in the Grihastha Ashram? Slowly and gradually?
I think I heard Vanaprastha and cultivated.
This particular mode of being a Vanaprastha
okay.
is being cultivated while one is in the Grihastha ashram itself, so that one practice and becomes easy when one takes Vanaprastha.
Is one cultivating the Vanaprastha element in Grihastha ashram? One's cultivating the pure devotional service, because all it is just different facilities for engaging. In other words, the Brahmachari Vanaprastha Sannyas means that you have the greatest facility for engaging in direct activities, and there's not a need for secondary activities as much, right? Grihastha means the facility to engage a greater amount of secondary activities, though the focus is on the primary. You keep it on the primary, then those secondary aspects start to become purified. So then when that becomes purified to a volume, you call it Vanaprastha. It's not that it's a separate cultivation.
Okay.
Does that make sense? It's just you're cultivating pure devotional service, and it'll naturally go through these things. That's why it's said, if one is engaged in devotional service, then everything becomes perfect, because the duties stay on, but the mood is what changes. Right? That's the difference. When you're dealing in the what's below Dharma, you know, Upadharma or you know, all these other kinds of non-recommended Dharmas, then it's based on their speculation, their own need and desire, and then their speculation how to obtain it. Right? It's not actually on the factual position. Right? So, that being the prominent kind of cultural approach in the contemporary environment, then the concept of, instead of taking our own self-centered needs and therefore mental speculation. So mental speculation becomes the basis, and then from that we try to obtain our needs. Well, in the Vedic system, then you are using duties, the performance of duties as the basis, and then you will choose duties according to what is the need in nature. Well, the other is that it's sense gratification, and it's my own mental speculation how I can get that sense gratification. Then you have the detail of, you know, this is what sense gratification I want. This is my nature, so therefore this is how I want to use it to get sense gratification. Well, while in the Vedic, then it's based on I work according to authority. So the authority is Shastra rather than the mind. And it's about trying to elevate yourself rather than try to, encourage the separation from Krishna, the atheism of trying to sense gratification. Right? So, therefore, the sense of duties being the basis of it, then it takes on a completely different flavor. And because of that, it's not very well understood. But so, for those who are more pious, then to follow the Shastra, they know that's the only way to actually get anything you want. Whatever it is. It doesn't matter. But, depending upon their view, if it's material and fruitive, then they'll follow the all three will, means that the karma, the jnani, the bhakta will follow the same activities, right? But what will be the difference is in the intent. So the karmis following the activity of piety to get material facility and enjoyment. The jnani is following that activity with a detachment so that he can be liberated. While the devotee is following with detachment to get the facility to please Krishna in bhakti. Right? So, therefore the jnani is working in detachment, but he doesn't want the result. The devotee is working in detachment, but he wants the result because it's for Krishna. So it's very different than we're used to. You know, bhakti. So we have the vikarmis. They can't understand karma. why you would work just for duty. Oh, that's dry. Oh, that's so. What about, you know, okay, we're doing that, but, you know, what about getting results? What about, you know, being practical? But it's the only practical thing. Vikarmis are not very practical. You could say, oh, but they have so much, they have this, and how long do they have it? After how many days does it keep shifting and changing, and what's the values, and what's, you know, before it kind of stayed for a longer period of time. But now the turnover is so fast, it's just, what is the standard? What is, there's no real connection. How practical is it? So there, that's not understood, because there's no sense of duty, because there's no sense of authority other than ourselves. So without a sense of acceptance of authority, you can't understand duties. Right? Because it's about oneself, it's about one's own mind. My mind says, I need this. That's the real authority. Rather than my mind says, I need this, but Shastra says, this is how you should do it. And actually, you don't really need it, but if you do feel you need it, then this is the way to do it. Then that takes the fun out of it, right? Because in Vikarma, I think I need it, and therefore I feel empowered to engage in that. Right, but in karma, then it's not really necessary. But since you insist, then this is the way to go about it. It doesn't give it the same glory as before, but because it tells you how to go about it, you'll actually get a better result than the Vikarmi will. Right. So that's the thing. And the karma is sustainable while the Vikarma is not. It appears that there's some good, you know, going up and down. But it's, you know, but the point is you have to remember the down is there. Well, in karma it's more stable. It appears not to go up very much, but it doesn't go down very much. Right? The Vikarmi wants more than he deserves, so therefore in bad results he gets more than he would want. For the Karmi, then he wants a certain amount, so that, you know, what's recommended by scripture, so therefore the suffering is also not so much. Does that make sense? So going from Vikarmi to Karmi, then that's difficult. But then the bhakti is completely different than either of these, because both of them are working for themselves. The one's pious enough to accept the authority of scripture, while the other one will only accept scripture if it supports what they want to do. If it supports what they want to do, they'll be out there with a sledgehammer banging everyone over the head how this is dharma. But on the next point, that doesn't support what they do, then it'll be, you know, but do we really have to follow? How much do we have to follow? Where's our free will? You know, it's Kali Yuga. Can we do all this? You know, it's not actually, you know, you get all that kind of whiny, the whiny kid, not the wimpy kid. The wimpy kid's all right. The whiny kid, it's like, nobody likes the whiny kid. Right? Yeah, if we made a series, The Whiny Kid, no one would buy it. Wimpy kid, that's funny. So we understand is that in here is that it's the renunciation that's the focus. Right? Because we have to remember vanaprastha is about renunciation. Right? But we may say that, but sannyasa is known as the renounced ashram. But do we notice the difference here? Renounced means it's already happened. Vanaprastha means renunciation. It's in the process. And when that becomes stable, then one's renounced. Right? So the mood of the sannyas is indifference, not renunciation. Renunciation is the vanaprastha stage. And then when they come to indifference, then they can either take sannyas or remain as a vanaprastha. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, whatever is favorable. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, so if the person's alone, then sannyas is a good option. But if someone's with a wife and it works very nicely, they're a good team in Krishna consciousness, then there's no need to adjust that. Does that make sense? But, you know, as Chanakya Pandit said, if there's your mother's not there and your wife's not favorable or she's not there, then why one's, then one should head to the forest. Okay. So, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued. During this season, the mountains sometimes released their pure water and sometimes did not. Just as experts in transcendental science sometimes give the nectar of transcendental knowledge and sometimes do not. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Sometimes in autumn, the falls come down from the top of the hill to supply clean water, and sometimes they stop. Similarly, sometimes great saintly persons distribute clear knowledge, and sometimes they are silent. Right? So, in other words, if there's an opportunity to speak properly, you do, and if not, you don't say anything. Because it has to be that it's effective. If it's not effective, then why work at it? Right? For those who are sentimental, they make the endeavor anyway, even though everyone knows it won't work. But if you don't try, then sentimentally people will feel bad. Oh, you don't care. But for those who are in the position where they're not attached to that social stigma, then if it's going to work, then they speak. And if it's not, they're not going to say anything. So that's the difference. Does that make sense? So we would see, Prabhupada, when there would be those who would appreciate the culture, Prabhupada talked very strongly that about not divorcing and this and that. That's the standard. But then for those who can't hear that at all, then Prabhupada wouldn't mention it. Because there's no use in mentioning it. They'll only feel bad, reject Prabhupada, reject Krishna consciousness, because for them, divorce is the most important thing in the cosmic creation and beyond. Right? Even though the cosmos is everything, that their desire goes even beyond that. Right? It's so important. So therefore, there's no way that you can't discuss. So one's silent. You're not approving it. But you're not disproving. You're not disapproving. You're just, whatever you have to do, this, that. You're not saying it's good. You're not saying, yeah, that's the right thing. You're just saying whatever you need to do. Does that make sense? So sometimes they're silent, or they'll be in positions where they're moving around and they don't say anything. No one knows who they are. So it's not an uncommon thing. Does that make sense? Yes.
Trying to clarify indifference and renunciation.
Yes.
Because we've seen an example of grihasthas. They are completely indifferent, but obviously not renounced. So.
But that means they're... Okay, yes.
Because from your previous statement, it says that indifference is higher than renunciation.
Yes, yes.
But then they're in...
No, but how are you defining indifference?
Whatever happens, they don't make, any endeavor for whatever happens around them.
But are they doing their duties?
Yeah. But without attachment and...
Yeah, so then that's the point, that because that's the position of the pure devotee. The pure devotee's position is actually indifference. While... to material results. One performs one's duties, one does them to please Krishna, one does one's best, but whatever the result comes, it's up to Krishna. So that's actually the position of pure devotional service. So in the Vedic system, the idea is that, well, at least minimum you come to that platform in sannyas. But actually one could come to it like Prahlad Maharaj, before he even textually takes up, the seriously the Varnashram system. So the whole point is all of the ashrams and varnas can be functioning in the mentality of sannyas that is just for Krishna. Mm-hmm. And so that's the ideal. But if one doesn't, then the Vedic system has a step-by-step process by which, kind of by duties, then you try to get to that point, try to see it that way. Because the grihastha might not, because they're so busy. There's so much pressures and emotions and this and that, they may not find it easy to do, but in vanaprastha sannyas, then they can start going in that direction. Does that make sense? So, therefore, if someone can come to that platform of sannyas by mentality, no matter which ashram they're in, then that's actually considered the best. But if it's the contemporary concept of indifference means they don't care, so they don't make the endeavor and they don't actually do their duties, that's not what we're talking about. That's just sinful, because that's akarma. It means you're supposed to do duties, but you don't. So that's actually sinful. It may not be as bad as vikarma, where you're actually endeavoring for something wrong, but you're not endeavoring for something right. So it's considered a not properly situated. One will get a reaction for that.
It seems that in this context, the main problem arises when the person in the Grahastha ashram is doing his or her duty, you know, on the external, you know, taking care of the facilities, but not catering to the other person's emotional needs. So that is
yes, well, that's what we're meaning in the modern concept of indifference. Because in the modern concept, you may be doing the activity, but emotionally you don't actually interact. But the Vedic is you take care on body, mind, and words, and spiritual, and all those you're interacting. But how the results come, that's up to Krishna. You're not attached to the results. So you can see, if there's no benefit to endeavor, why would you? Right? In the modern, no, you have to try. Like in the Ayurveda, it says that, let's say the doctor's at his house, and somebody comes to the house, and they're saying, you know, grandfather's dying, please come immediately, this, that, blah. There's certain symptoms, or omens, that if he sees those, that means there's no benefit in going. Right? The person's going to die anyway. And so then he's not supposed to go. Or if even he does start, they're not there, but as he starts on the journey, then he sees, you know, he shouldn't go. Because actually he can't do anything. Right? Now, by the modern thing, the sentiment is no, but you have to try. Because it's all about sentiment, not about reality. So then in here, now, if you know he's going to die, and therefore that person themselves is going to get that hope up, are they going to focus on the Lord? No. So therefore, then they'll be thinking, you know, about this. Because it's like if you have no hope, you start to think about moving on. But if you think there's hope, then immediately all of your desires come up, and whichever the strongest come up the most prominently. So it's of no benefit for the dying person. Then you also have the other aspect is that you go there, you try, but they can't be saved. Then you're going to be blamed. Because the family's attached, because they have that same sentiment. They're attached and you couldn't do it, you're a bad doctor. Rather than, no, the guy's supposed to die. So sometimes that complaint comes up about Kasyapa, you know, and Maharaj Parikit. But he saw, according to karma, he was supposed to leave his body there anyway. So the curse of Takshika just was a way that it will happen. It wasn't that he was supposed to live longer, and then Takshika, you know, then by the curse his life was shortened. No, his life was just as long as it was always going to be. Because he's a pure devotee, they can't have an effect. But it's just a way for them to go. Just like for Krishna, their dynasty at some point has to leave, right? Because he came, the demigods came, and they all have to go. So how that's going to happen? So when Gandhari cursed them in 28 years, then they'll all, you know, kill each other and all that. Then Krishna thought, oh, okay, that's a nice way to do it. You know, but it's not that it was supposed to be a 50 years and then by your curse it's only 28. And no. So he was not supposed to live past that point anyway. So then why bring him back to life? Because there's nothing there to bring back. Does that make sense? So it's the same kind of principle. But we'll think, oh no, but he could have tried, but there's no benefit in trying. You know what I'm saying? So that's why at that point, where Vedanta philosophy comes in. So even the atheists know you have to use that. That's the only thing you can use at that point. Because sentiment is so overwhelming that the intelligence doesn't function. So therefore you have to come in with Vedanta that's just straight intelligence. And then by the two, then you'll get something. So we see Hiranyakashipu, a vowed demon. But when his brother's killed and the women and everybody in the family is lamenting, he just speaks Vedanta. Because you can't, by the sentiment, do anything. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that you're looking at the aspect of what's actually beneficial, because you're talking about elevation, because not being the body, they'll go on. So if they're a good karmi, they'll be elevated to heavenly planets or a better birth in some way. A jnani, then he'll be elevated to higher planets or he'll be liberated. And the devotee will go back to Godhead. So what's the loss? Right? That's the whole point. Is that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Good. You had something?
Like this particular point about them silent. So, find in the Shri Vaishnavas, the Shri Sannyasis, whenever it is Chaturmasya, they go to some particular Divyadesham and they stay over there and they continue with their sadhana. So, does that mean that that is also, you know, execution of silence, wherein they are not preaching and traveling in that?
Is the Sri Vaishnava Sannyasis going to a holy place and sitting down and performing their sadhana? Is that another form of this, because they're not traveling and preaching? The point is if you go there, would they not talk?
Yeah, they talk.
They talk, so they're not doing a Murari Bapu. He doesn't talk for half. Until noon, he won't talk. So one, it gets a lot of mileage. You know, and that he's a great, you know, so austere in that. But the other thing is that he talks all day, that, you know, by not talking in the morning, it saves his voice. So.
What's that?
Murari Bapu.
Sorry, you're from South.
Hmm?
You're from India.
No, yeah, he's big in India. So, So they're not silent because they're talking about Krishna. So real silence is they only talk about Krishna. So you could take it from there as sometimes they're always talking about Krishna, but sometimes they'll also just, you know, chit-chat with people to bring it around to that. You know, or just it comes up, you just talk, and other times they won't. But generally it means that they may not even discuss something of Krishna consciousness because there's no point. So you just have to see how to apply, how does this silence apply? Sukadev Goswami continued, "The fish swimming in the increasingly shallow water did not at all understand that the water was diminishing. Just as foolish family men cannot see how the time they have left to live is diminishing with every passing day. Just as a miserly, poverty-stricken person, overly absorbed in family life, suffers because he cannot control his senses, the fish swimming in the shallow water had to suffer the heat of the autumn sun." Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, "The small ponds, which were filled with water because of the rainy season, gradually dry up in autumn." The big ponds will remain, they just become smaller, but small ponds disappear. "As for the small aquatics living in the reservoirs, they cannot understand that their ponds are diminishing day by day. As the materially engrossed persons cannot understand that their duration of life is being reduced day by day. Such persons are engaged in maintaining cows, property, children, wife, society, and friendship. Due to the reduced water and scorching heat from the sun in the autumn season, the small creatures living in small reservoirs of water are very much disturbed." Because it gets hot, the water, and so they don't really like that. "They are exactly like uncontrolled persons who are always unhappy from being unable to enjoy life or maintain their family members." And so, as things go, their piety is reducing, their time of life is reducing, so therefore their experience is getting less and less, but they can't see it's due to that. Right? So only the devotee can actually see properly how this is. That, yes, things reduce, but that's just the way it is, and better it reduces, because the less it is, then the less there is to worry about for next life, right? And so if there's nothing here, then all there is there. Right? Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Gradually the different areas of land give up their muddy condition, and the plants grew past their unripe stage. In the same way that sober sages give up egotism and possessiveness. These are based on things different from the real self, namely the material body and its byproducts. Right? So egotism and possessiveness, this is actually the core problem. Right? So it mentions that egotism is the difference between the two. Right? Between making it material or spiritual is about the ego. So if the ego is false, then it's material. And if the ego is correct, then it's spiritual. Right? So false ego means it's automatically material, because what is false ego? Then you have a false identity. What does a false identity do? Use knowledge for false activities that give false results. What we mean here, false means they're not actually connected with the soul. They're a false identity. Right? So possessiveness is going to be in the area of your identity. Right? False identity, false possessiveness. True identity, true possessiveness. Right? The Brajabasis, they have true identity. They're servants of Krishna. And what is their sense of possessiveness? Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's the difference there. So yeah, where were we? Oh, we're down here. So egotism is the sense of identity. So I. So when I am the controller and enjoyer, then there's a problem. Right? And when I'm servant of Krishna, then it's spiritual. That's why any material identity is to be given up. It doesn't mean that it's not used, but to identify with it is a problem. Right? Does that make sense? It's just like, okay, someone is wearing clothes. Someone's identifying with the clothes. Someone's driving a car. Someone's identifying with the car. You understand? There's a difference. So we'll take it, oh, if we don't identify, we can't use it. Because that's karmis. They won't do it unless they're getting the results. And the jnanis, they don't want the results, they don't do it. So that's just material consciousness. It's still material identity. Right? So having the material identity and so-called giving up the material identity, then these are both the same thing. Because, no, I'm not the body, so I'm just the soul. Yes, that's okay. But what are you? Right? Because if we just say, I'm the soul, and it's not servant of Krishna, then it's still technically a material concept of identity. Just you're not adding on the gross trappings, that's all. You're just keeping the core principle of I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? So the devotee, because they have that ego of I'm servant of Krishna, then we don't call it egoism, right? Or egotistic. Then the sense of possessiveness is in connection with Krishna. It's about things for Krishna. Therefore, you know, you protect the temple, protect the devotees, anything that's going to be beneficial for Krishna, you take care of it, right? So this, to come to that, that's actually a point of advancement. So we see that when it's ours, we take care of it nicely. Then when it's Krishna's, then it comes into the, how you say, for many it comes into the Barwari category, where it's not mine, and it's Krishna's, so it's everybody's, so everybody else will take care. I don't have to worry about it because I'm so busy and I'm so important. And so Krishna's stuff never gets taken care of, right? The temple vehicles and the brahmachari ashram as points in case. Yes.
It appears that in development of our spiritual identity, there are different stages.
Yes.
And some people start, I'm a Vaishnava, then I'm a Gaudiya, I'm a follower of Srila Prabhupada. But then some devotees, they start from the other side, I'm a servant of my guru, and then they just, you know, catch that point. So we see it's a very different identity. And then people behave differently. So what would be the proper...
That's where you have the importance of the founder Acharya, is that everything's about the founder Acharya. So his instructions, his example, his, you know, in this, his books, this is then what everything should be judged by. So our spiritual masters are connection to the founder Acharya. And that's then where the standards are from. Then from there, then we start to develop, you know, farther. So it's not a problem if we only see the guru and founder Acharya and don't understand Krishna so much, because we see that even in that example of Ramanuja Acharya, I think it was with Kuresh. Right? So then Ramanuja Acharya standing in front of, I'm not sure where that was, if it was in Sri Rangam or Bharadvaj, but he's standing there, and he's in front of the deity, because they have these small doors, they're not so big, like not like ours, you know, ours are like a hall entrance, they have smaller doors. So Ramanuja is standing in front of the door, looking at the deity and offering his prayers. Koresh has got his, he's standing on the side where the column is, where you have Jai and Vijay, and there, with his back, you know, not even in front of the gap, right over, Didi can't even see him, and he's got his back to, you know, Jai or Vijay, and is facing Ramanujacharya, and with his hold of fans and offering his prayers. So after the little, you know, after their darshan, then when they're going, then Ramanujacharya asks him, why are you doing this? The deity's on the other side. Why you have your back to the, you know, why you're looking this way? He says, Rangaji is your deity. You know Rangaji. Says, you're my deity. I know you. And so by knowing you, you know Rangaji. That way I know Rangaji.
Like that. Similar kind of same. Ramanuja's disciple. And,
Kuresh is not Ramanuja's disciple?
Second.
Oh, there's another one also. Okay.
Good story.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. Same. He's on the way to the darshan of Ananta Padmana, this disciple. And Ramanuja Charya says, go and see him. He says, no, my deity is right in front of me. And you'll not go to Ananta Padmana. And go back to Sri Ranga.
Okay. You could hear?
No.
You could hear?
No.
Okay, the front row heard. Okay. So, there was also another disciple of Ramanujacharya, and they were walking by Ananta Padmanabha temple. Is that the oldest temple?
Yes.
That's the one.
Adi Keshava is the oldest.
He goes back, I think, millions of years. He's the oldest deity on earth. Is what was the name? Adi Keshava. So then they're going by Ananta Padmanabha, and then Ramanuja told him to go in to take darshan and see the deities. And then he said, no, my deity is right here. Right? So then they just continued on to Sri Ranga. He didn't take darshan. So this principle is there. That's fine as long as it goes back to the founder, because our means the founder Acharya is means you can say is the spiritual master represents the parampara. But in our case, then the spiritual master is representing the founder Acharya. And the founder Acharya is then representing the whole parampara. So as long as that kind of connection and that relationship is there, then you'll see a commonality between all devotees. Right? Does that make sense? So it can work, but it has to go back to there. But if that's not understood, then like you said, there'll be quite a difference in the flavors.
So then, in those who follow and try to focus on Srila Prabhupada, then Srila Prabhupada, you know, revealed his external mood as a preacher.
Right.
But then people get in out of shape, you know, what's his internal mood, and then they can really, you know, focus because it really bothers them.
But the point is, the internal mood is that of trying to please Lord Chaitanya and Rupa Goswami and the Acharyas through whatever situation you're at, you try to preach Krishna consciousness. You try to help others be Krishna conscious or take advantage of Krishna conscious association.
Is this internal or external?
That's the internal mode.
Is that what people say that's external, that everybody knows, but then internal?
Yeah, but the point is you have to be able to tell the difference between what's internal and external. External means because of that mood, that's the internal mood, therefore externally you see what they do. Lord Chaitanya, is he known as a preacher?
Yes.
When he traveled around, did he preach?
Yes.
So what's that based on? Then we see Vishwambar and Gaura. That's what it's based on. Yeah. So Chaitanya is what you see, and Vishwambar and Gaur are the other two. Did Prabhupada not sit with devotees, especially leaders, try to cultivate their understanding and mood? Those who traveled with him, did he not try to cultivate? Individuals that are there, did he not cultivate? Yes or no? Yes, so that's Vishwambar. So that's an internal mood. And was he not absorbed in Krishna and his desires to preach? We see from his songs that he wrote before going to America, then you see that, you know, that's his mood. So one has to be able to tell the difference. Because just to say, oh, that's the external, now what's the internal? External always comes from internal. So in other words, what you do in the gross body is what the subtle body is the focus. And so for those who are conditioned, that may be just where it ends. And then the soul is, I'm the controller and enjoyer. But for those who are the pure devotees, then the consciousness is there to please Krishna. Therefore, the internal mood is to please Krishna. Therefore, the external activity is for pleasing Krishna. So you have to understand what they're dealing with. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. Because how else? What are they looking for in the way of what's his mood?
You know, what is his swarup in the spiritual world?
And what will that do for you? That's like the child asking, oh, well, what position did my parents use at the time of conception? What will that do for you? On what level will that do anything for you? That's what I'm saying. It's a foolish question. In other words, if it has to be asked, they shouldn't be asking it. That's the point. You know, it's like the follow the jiva point. You either understand it or you don't. And if you don't ask. Because that's not the internal mood. See, because we're taking it that the specifics are the main thing. What's being missed here is, where is this coming from? This will come down from the sahajiyas. Like that, you know, bless their souls, but, you know, come down from there. Now, whether it's coming down from Radhakund Babaji's or it's coming down from Govardhan Babaji's, then, you know, that's up to the particular association. But in here, then the difficulty comes up is that we're taking it that we're trying to place that Shravana Dasa means that I'm hearing about my specifics in my relationship with Krishna. In other words, my sarup. Right? And then Varna Dasa is just, now that I know what my sarup is, I adjust with that. Right? And then according to that, in Smarana Dasa, then I am remembering Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. Right? So it's been shifted. What's being missed is Shravana Dasa means I'm hearing about the mood of the surrender of the devotees, and for us specifically, the surrender of the devotees of Braj. When I adjust with that, that I actually have that kind of surrender, then what is my sarup has some meaning. So in other words, they're actually leaving out the generic mood of the 100% surrender of Bhajbasis, because whoever it is, it's 100%. And we see from the pastime, it doesn't matter. They're all 100% surrendered. Well, in Dwarka, it's slightly different flavor. Right? So that's the first thing, when that's appreciated. So that 100% surrender, that's why Bhishma Dev, Narad Muni, Uddhava, they all appreciate the gopis in Vrindavan. Because of that 100% surrender. It's not that at night Bhishma Dev then, you know, goes into the back room, closes the door, and then puts on a sari and then sits around. You know, doesn't do all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's not happening, right? You know, he's not doing the de Niro thing, right? You know, so, right? So that's the whole point. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So this is where the mistake is being made. Because people have brought up all this about Sarup, but where did they get this Sarup from? Where is it coming from? Prabhupada doesn't talk about it. The Acharyas don't talk about it. When they do talk about it, they've already talked about it after the mood of surrender. So when we just go straight to there, that's the only way I can know how to meditate on the spiritual world, means if that's what you have to know, then you're not meditating anyway on the spiritual world. Because it's the mood of surrender. Right? So that's the thing, is that surrender of the gopis, that 100% surrender, any devotee, no matter where they are in the creation, can take advantage and appreciate that. If you are appreciating their full surrender and you try to fully surrender, that will work for you in Vaikuntha, it'll work in Dwarka, it'll work anywhere. So that's the main thing. So that mood of that full surrender, that's the real thing. Then the details, then that's something else. But then one has to be able to use that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem. You know, in public, the married women don't talk about boys. But the adolescents, that's all they talk about. So then in their mind, they're more developed. But actually, the grihastha women are more developed. So they only talk about to who you're supposed to talk that stuff to. Well, teenagers will talk it to anybody in any situation in front of anybody. So it's not actually a higher principle. It's not mature because they don't catch the actual core mood of Braja Bhakti. And once they catch that, then wherever one's situated, then that's a next step. But you have to catch that first. So if you catch that, then it'll be understood. It'll be revealed. Because in any case, when you get to the spiritual world, when you think of Krishna and appear in the spiritual world, then either Krishna or his devotee or the spiritual master, they will come and reveal everything. So you don't have to worry that it'll happen. But the point is, unless you're liberated, what will you do with it anyway? You know what I'm saying? That's the point. It's these kind of discussions are overrated in their importance. It's you have to catch the right mood of that surrender to Krishna. And in that, then any of the positions within Vrindavan, then they have a value. And then wherever one's attraction is to, that's where it is. Because it doesn't really matter. You know, just like we see, what is it, Hridaya Chaitanya? His guru is, that he's, his Diksha guru is in the Shakya line. But his Siksha guru is in the Gopis line. So, and it works out. So it's not a problem where there's a connection. So if one is worried, no, but if Prabhupada's not like this, then I have to find a spiritual master that has exactly the, you know, what I'm looking for, as if you know what you're looking for. You know? That's like the guy who can't even drive a car that goes into the car parts place and tries to talk big and everybody knows he's a joke. You know. It's mentioned in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur mentions in Raghubharata Machandrika, that those who project themselves into the pastimes, no one in Braj trusts them. So he mentions it very specifically. No one likes. Once one devotee was asking me, is that I was really nicely thinking about Krishna and the absorption was so great. It was like really ecstatic. They were there absorbed so much. And then they pictured themselves there in that pastime to take part. And as soon as they did that, the whole thing disappeared. And so they were asking, what happened? Why did it disappear? And the point is the Brajbasis don't like people who crash the party. You have to be invited. So you come to Purvarag, you're invited to the party. If not, you assist those who do. So therefore, actual rag bhakti means that you are meditating on the path, the service that those who are the eternal servants are doing. You never imagine yourself as involved. As soon as you do, that's the hajya. That will not be accepted by anyone in Braj. So it's a very clear thing. One has to know exactly what's going on. Otherwise, then we'll miss the point. And you catch that, then it's there. So you can meditate on those who are. That's why it says follow in the footsteps. You meditate upon them. When you come to the liberated platform, then you will actually physically follow in the footsteps. But otherwise, you just mentally then see that service. Appreciate that. Is that something? Yes.
Yeah, so in our Gayatri meditation, when we meditate on the spiritual master who's pleasing to Krishna with his service.
Yes.
So is that enough? Because it's a general thing, but how he's pleasing, we shouldn't really worry about.
We won't understand it anyway. You know, it's just like, will the third grader understand, you know, the quantum physics formula? You know? He won't. So it doesn't matter. But the point is because he likes math and he focuses on math, in time he'll be that quantum physicist. He'll get there. So all we have to do is know that the spiritual master is pleasing, you know, Prabhupada and the Acharyas and Rupa Goswami, therefore pleasing Lord Chaitanya, and it's all going to work. But you have those moods of So you have these moods of these three of Sambandhabhideya and Prayojana. In other words, he's seeing himself as a devotee of Krishna. He's attracted to performing service for Krishna. As Govindaji, he's performing service for Krishna, and as Gopinath, then he's trying to please Krishna. So with that meditation, that's enough. This other thing, it doesn't mean anything because one's not there. Because that kind of meditation is something when it's 100%. That means there is no gap. Does that make sense? Like, remember, here a devotee was there for a discussion. I think it might have been Bhakti True Maharaj, because it was. I think it was in Bengali, between these, you know, old devotees. I think, you know, Prabhupada's godbrother and somebody else, I don't know. Krishnas Babaji? Prabhupada said he's liberated. Akinchana Krishnas Babaji. So he was talking with someone else, and I don't remember who was saying what. One of them was saying, about 11 minutes in an hour, I'm able to fully meditate on Krishna, and then the rest of the time, it's not as focused. And the other one says, I have about 11 minutes left. I get most of the time, but 11 minutes I can't get. You know, so when you're on that level, then, you know, for now and again, we might think, you know, occasionally. For less than a minute. And that's not they were talking about every hour of the day. It comes out like that. So, you know, we're talking about 1 minute every few days or a few weeks or months or, you know, like that. So, you know, our level of the first level of, I say, Smarana Dasa is right on very basic. You know, I'm not sure what the first one is, but I think the translation means occasional. So our occasional may be less often than would be ideal. So as that becomes, the occasional becomes more regular, then it turns into, you know, generally meditating. But, you know, so in other words, one's occasionally you remember and one's occasionally you're not remembering. Then the third one is you're steady, right? And then you are meditating. Then it becomes deep, so it becomes samadhi. So you have these levels. So we're on the occasional. So as we get more into it, then, as we said, Krishna, the spiritual master and associate of the Lord, will reveal. So that's the whole point. Krishna wants you to come back to Godhead. So if you come to a more advanced platform while here in this body, it will be mentioned. That's why Raghunath Das Goswami, then, he, in his Manasiksha prayers, in the first verse, is then mentioning that he offers his obeisances to the Brajabasis, who are there physically or by meditation. So all those who are in Braj, meaning all the eternal associates, all those who have come there to perfect their love for Krishna, or those who are in meditation, they're still in the body here, And then through meditation, they're in Vrindavan, in their Swarup, and rendering service to Krishna. He offers his respects. So that means one can, while within this body, come to that platform of bhav sadhana, even though one's still in the body. So, but how does that happen? It's revealed. Because it's not by knowledge, it's not by reading, it's by understanding. So that mood means then that mood of trying to please the acharyas and whatever is necessary, how to engage. So it's not about the secondary. It's about the mood. Is that makes sense? Yeah. So if the mood's right, you'll find the secondary. But if we look at just the secondary, then sometimes we can find an opportunity for the secondary we understand, and sometimes not. So that's why we're not as stable in devotional service. But when we catch the actual primary aspect, then no matter what the situation is, we can apply it. That's the difference. That's why the neophyte is not as stable, the madhyama is, you know, considered stable, but the uttama then is, you know, that's the best situation. It's just a matter of how much one's focused on the primary or on the secondary. So that's why for the secondary, for the neophyte, following the rules is obligatory, because they don't actually know the mood so much. Occasionally it'll be there, that's why they're inspired. But it won't be stable, so therefore they need the rules to just actually be engaged in something that's recommended. While the madhyama being more stable, he can make some adjustments, but as soon as the standard position is available, he'll take that. Mm-hmm. He won't be attached to a lower one because it was there. Does that make sense? While the neophyte, then if something that you're attached to can be engaged, then they'll just want to only engage that. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say we're offering sweets to Krishna. Now for the kid, now that is the offering that should be only made. You know, they're not interested in the shukta, you know, stuff like that. You know, so it's just, they get attached to it, though it's bona fide. But because of that attachment to that particular form will get in the way, because the point is offering things to Krishna. And offering things that he likes, so he has this whole meal, Shukta Shakati Bhaji, right up to all the sweets. Yeah, I can't remember up to the sweet part. Yeah, no. This is so many salties, right?
Shukta Shakati.
But I'm saying shukta is bitter, shak is bitter, nalita, kushmanda is pumpkin, you know, dali dalna, so you have the you know, the dalnas, the dolls, dugda tumbi, I think that's, what do you call it, lao cooked in milk, so that might be, but it also could be a salty part. Dadhi is yogurt, mocha, I think. Like mocha, what is it, kanta? Ganta? But whatever, you always make mocha ganta. That's the banana tree flower. So that's always made into this kind of, it's always a dry subject, but they call it a ganta, but it's not, it's somehow another, not actually like a ganta. But it's called that.
Where is this explained, Maharaj? Where is this explained? Or is
Bhogartik?
It's the song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the Bhogartik song. It has all these. You know how they all come, they sit in the line, then service, then after they eat, then they get up, wash your hands, mouth and feet, all that kind of stuff. So, yes. But for the children, then just the sweets are the important thing, and if nothing else is there, then that's fine. Like that. So that will be there. So it's devotional service, but it'll have that weakness. Right? For the madhyama, then you will work whatever needs to be done, but there's certain areas, because of the conditioned nature, he prefers working within. But it's not exactly an attachment, it's just as comfortable. Right? And that the uttama, then they are able to function in whatever capacity, but they'll always act according to the capacity of what their nature is. But what they can do in that capacity, they can do more with it than anybody else can. So, yeah, so the point is what we're saying is these things will be revealed. Otherwise, how will the process work? The holy name is revealing things. Krishna is in the heart. He's instructing. Prabhupada mentions that many times. So all these things will be understood. List of the sweets.
Indra Bhogadi, Mudga Bhogadi.
Okay. Shashvi Pistaka Kheer. Yeah, Kheer with, what do you call it? Kheer with, what do you call it? With pistachios and Puli Payashana, then Puli Pitas. Yeah. Pulis are the roll them. I think puli is the one where you roll the dough out like rice grains, mm-hmm. and then it's cooked in there. Yeah, that's puli pita. Here they call it puli pita, but there's puli payasha, mm-hmm. like that. So then the second line it disappeared before we got to it. So you know, kids go for the sweets, and you know, different people that you know. Depending, if you're a little younger, then you go for all the fried things, and if you're a little older, you go for all the bitter things, and you know, like that.
Maharaj,
yes.
About this question on true possessiveness.
True possessiveness.
Mr. Prajwasi's hand.
Yes.
So we can say that there is a gradation of this possessiveness.
There's a gradation of the possessiveness.
For the five rasas.
For the five rasas. What do you mean there's a gradation?
Gradation in the sense.
But I'm saying, are you talking about on the transcendental platform, or you're talking about us as sadhakas?
On the transcendental platform. As sadhakas, we are observing that how the gradations are.
But yeah, we're observing, but
possessiveness is in totality in each rasa for the.
But the absorption in each rasa is complete.
Yeah, that's what it is. But.
So what gradation are we making here?
I said that. I mean to say that. Conjugal is the topmost possessiveness, whereas for the Shantarasa, it is.
There's no possessiveness in Shantarasa.
Yeah, exactly. There's no possessiveness.
But, and what? Why are we going into this?
No, I'm just trying to examine that.
Yes, but why do you want to examine this rather than what is the sense of possessiveness as a sadhaka?
That you already explained.
Oh. And so, what is the kind of possessiveness of these positions? Is that what we're getting at? Means you add some possessiveness, then you'll get the Dushanta, then you'll get Dasya. You add it more, then you'll get Saki, add more than you get, so it's just it deepens each time. So what is the possessiveness? But the point is the possessiveness of the residents of Vrindavan is complete. So that's the main thing there. Then within that complete possessiveness, then there's a specific flavor of the possessiveness. How they see Krishna, what's the relationship? Bendikwan there, stai bhava, so that makes the particular Alambana and Udipans, that will therefore generate how they interact. So it just defines which ones of those they're dealing with. So yes, it's already established the possessiveness is the greatest in the conjugal rasa, but at the same time is then why I'm asking is what are you going to do with this knowledge? Possess it. Oh, okay. 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 Then moving on. Okay. So you're okay. Or? Yeah. Good. Okay. Sukadev Goswami. No, we did the fish.
And egotism and possessiveness.
Okay, small creatures, unhappy, right. Sukadev Goswami continued. Gradually, the different areas of land give up their muddy condition. No, we already said that.
In the next page.
These are based, okay, we're on the next page. Okay. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. The muddy earth gradually dries up, and newly grown fresh vegetation begins to wither. Similarly, for one who has taken to Krishna consciousness, desire for family enjoyment gradually dries up. So here then the muddiness is given, that the muddiness in the consciousness. And so that starts to become clear by the autumn season. And then in that, then one's attachment for family enjoyment is gradually given up. Because it's not that dealing in the family environment's the problem, it's the attachment for the enjoyment within that that's the problem. Right? Engaging the family environment in Krishna's service is not a problem. But trying to enjoy the benefits of the family life, that's where the problem lies. So it's not in the activity yet.
And trying to perform your duty in attachment to that?
Then that's a little bit better.
But it's still
attachment. It's still an attachment, because then we're attached to duties. That's why we see is that up to the first six cantos, you could maintain that, and it would work very nicely. You'd have you'd be very inspired in focusing on pure devotional service. But we see with seventh canto, then Prahlad Maharaj is pointing out that actually the religious principles only have value because they're connected to Krishna. You know, because otherwise sometimes we say, no, but you know, we have to be equal to everyone, and that, why? You know, that cannot be explained. Because they can't see how it pleases Krishna. So it is one of the qualities that Krishna mentions, but they don't see it connected to Krishna. They see that it's itself is of value, and they're attached to that point. You know what I'm saying? So much of the time, the moralistic positions that devotees talk about is actually an attachment to it rather than devotional service, because they're not actually seeing how it pleases Krishna. They just take, oh, being good, Krishna won't like somebody who's not good. But the point is Krishna likes everybody. He doesn't like that they're in a not good position, but he's sitting in their heart. You know, that's the whole point. So he actually, it's a different perspective. So then as that develops, then we will see that it's about the devotional service. So that's the real thing. And then somebody in devotional service then performs their duties. So we take it that, oh, giving up all religion means I don't follow anything. Now I can be totally speculative. Right? As a karmi, or totally just whatever I feel as a jnani. But no, it means I'm only doing that activity because it pleases Krishna. Arjuna's only fighting because it'll please Krishna. But what he does is his kshatriya duties. So we see the Brajbasis, they're engaged in all the natural duties that are there. But they're only doing them to please Krishna. Right? Because before this, it was generally kings and that is more great than us, so we can understand it's different, so that it's the situation is different, and if seeing it all connected to Krishna, then it's cool. When it comes down to the Brajbasis, they're doing exactly the same thing I'm doing. You know? And I'm doing because I'm attached, so why are they doing it? You know? Same, attachment to Krishna. Or we're doing because of attachment to not Krishna. So that's where then it comes. So that is clear. Then we get to this. And then we see here more of the philosophy comes up to establish it. Because after this, then we go into the gopis. Right? And so if we're finding difficulty and subtleties with Mother Jashoda, then the gopis, it's even finer. Because Mother Jashoda, it's this, you know, it's very strongly this or strongly that. While the gopis, it'll be all kinds of things going on at once. Mother Yashoda is there nicely dealing with Krishna. Mother Yashoda is very upset, and it's obvious. You know, so it's always obvious. But the gopis are upset and they're smiling. Or, you know, they want to be with Krishna, they're saying, go away. So how are we going to understand that? So we have to be able to discriminate these that pure devotion is the only thing. That full surrender is the only thing. Then there's a difference in the flavor between the different rasas. But it's based on the principle of full surrender. You know what I'm saying? It's like that. Yeah. You know, it's just like, let's say, if I don't know how to cook sweet rice, does it matter whether I discuss whether I'm going to put raisins in it or pistachios or both, or should we use saffron or not? Or that's what we're meaning. We want to discuss about the gopis and what's the position and, you know, like that. But we don't even know how to cook. So someone who can cook sweet rice and make it nice, then you can discuss what variations you do to cook it with different things. So that's what he's saying. And he's saying the generic surrender of the Brajabasis is the first. Then there's the specifics within Brajabhakti, which is in the five rasas. So,
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.